Welcome back, everyone. It's 10:40 by my computer, so I'll just get started. Again, my name is Anna Austin Ford. I'm one of our local Dharma leaders with SIMS. I've been teaching for about 5 years now under the guidance of Tim and Tiweri. And the subject I'm speaking about today is the second foundation of mindfulness, or Vedana. It's a Pali word, the language of the time of the Buddha. It's V-E-D-A-N-A, Vedana. And feeling tone refers to that. Sometimes it's called the hedonic tone of experience. So you might know that word, hedonism, meaning like enjoyment, pleasure. And that's what it is. It's this sort of tone that comes with all conditioned experiences, all contact with phenomena. And the Buddha spoke of three different feeling tones. One is pleasant, one is unpleasant, and one is neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So we kind of covered all the bases there. Today, I'm mostly going to talk about pleasant and unpleasant because it's a little harder for me to talk about neither nor, or sometimes called neutral, because it is hard to see by its nature. It doesn't jump out to us as practitioners. So it's a subtler thing that might be better left for a later talk. So this, I really appreciate how he's put Vedana in between the two foundations, the first one that Susan talked about with the body, and then the third one that will be talked about later with the mind, because Vedana, in a way, is a bridge between the two. Because if you feel, like right now, like Susan was suggesting, feel into the body and find a sensation there, locate a sensation in the body. And I'll just talk from my current experience, because I'm, you know, on stage in a way, right, with a dozen people listening to what I'm saying, I have a little kind of flutteriness in my chest. And I would say that that's unpleasant. We don't need to dig deep into analyzing this foundation. It's like, what's my one-off? It's like I had a teacher say, it's ooh, that would be the pleasant ooh, or I mean, it's very thumbs up, thumbs down. So I really appreciate this foundation because it is so simple and available. And if you look at like all of the Buddhist teachings, he could have picked anything to put in these foundations, and he picked these four. And so Vedana to him was very important. It was like, if you use the math, it was like a fourth of the practice. It was that important. And so I'll talk about why it's so important in a little bit, but I wanted to do a little Zoom experiment where I'm going to share my screen, and I want you to be with me in looking at these images. There's nothing too triggering here, but just to do a little practice with it. When I show you the image, if I can make the tech work right, just notice in yourself what comes up. Just that thumbs up, thumbs down, the yay or nay of it. So let's go have a go at this and see what happens. Yeah? And then I'll give you another one if I can. We get that? And then a final one. Okay. So thank you for playing along. My point here is, well, for starters, just to get us understanding what this is, it's just the initial jolt that comes from the contact. It was the object, for example, that image of Mount Rainier. An object, when it strikes the eye, a working eye. These are the two pieces dharmically that come together to create contact. And from contact comes the Vedana, the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So a couple of points I want to make about this is that with, say, Mount Rainier, love Mount Rainier over here. I've climbed it many times. I have very fond memories of hikes I've done there with groups of other people. By myself, I saw a bear there last week. I love Mount Rainier. But I also read in the news recently about a man who died walking down from Camp Muir. He got lost in the whiteout. There was 100-mile-an-hour wind, which is inconceivable to me, and he died. So he had a partner with him, and she survived. So what do you imagine is the feeling tone that comes up for her when she sees a picture of Mount Rainier? And I knew another woman who her husband had died there with her. Same circumstances, actually. So that's what I'm trying to indicate here is that the feeling tone is not in Mount Rainier. The object itself is actually neutral. The feeling tone is in the conditioned system of, I don't want to say me because that personalizes it, but language kind of forces me to say my response is in me. It comes from me. So again, like the middle picture I thought was a good one, a juicy steak. That's what I Googled to get that image, juicy steak. For me, oh, thumbs down, unpleasant Vedana. I have been a vegetarian for 20 years. Some people might love that image, especially since we're coming toward lunch here. That image of the steak, like my stomach's rumbling, my mouth is watering. It's not in the steak, it's in the system that's receiving the input. Okay. Third picture, peanut butter cookies. You know, at different times in my life, actually, it's not like I have the same Vedana for all the objects continuously. It's, sometimes I'm like, yeah, cookies, I want some of that. And sometimes I'm like, ooh, sugar, butter, that's bad for you. I'll get fatter, you know? My boyfriend grew up in Scotland. He thinks peanut butter is disgusting. So he would, and he'll do that. He'll have that unpleasant Vedana and he'll go, ugh, you know, when I eat peanut butter. And I go, babe, you don't have to talk about what I'm eating. You know, then I get an unpleasant Vedana from his response. So these are my ways of trying to help us see that it starts with sense contact. I have to have a working eye, or if it's a sound, I have to have the working ear, and I have to have the object. So this is the beginning, really, of the cycle of suffering. And that's for a whole, you know, we've been talking about that at Sims all year. This is a gigantic topic of where suffering comes from. But I always try to remember when I give a talk or when I'm in a Dharma situation, that's what this is about, is ending of suffering. That's why I do this. That's why I come to the cushion, come to talks, is trying to see how is it that I can end suffering for myself and hopefully for others. So Vedana is such a key here. I talked about, you know, the second foundation being so important. Like Vedana was so important to the Buddha that he made it one of the four. So, I wanted to give a couple more. So the sense organs, like we talked about vision with seeing Mount Rainier, seeing a juicy steak. And there's also, of course, the other sense organs. There's the ear, there's touch, and there's the mind and smell. Okay, so I wanted to give a couple other examples of Vedana I thought of recently. I live on a street where the fire truck goes by sometimes, and I don't like that in the middle of the night. That is unpleasant Vedana. When I hear the siren, I can hear it far away and I go, yeah, I know he's going to come right by the house. Windows are open, it's summer. And that's unpleasant Vedana. Yet, if I were the one calling 911, if my house were on fire, that would be very pleasant. It'd be like, oh, thank God, right? So it is not in the siren. And this is so important to get because this is where suffering comes from. This is how it starts, is that shouldn't be happening. That's aversion. That siren should not be, really, because they think it should. It's important, actually, that siren, so someone doesn't get run over. Like, this self-centered view of how things should be is what the mindfulness and hearing the teachings and then trying to practice them, that's what it helps me get out of that. One more example that I've always remembered, I didn't know it was Vedana when I was 15, but we had a friend of the family who was an older woman, and she had been married and divorced twice, which as a 15-year-old, I thought was quite scandalous. But she told me one time that she had loved the smell of Polo cologne because her first husband wore Polo cologne. And after a while, she started to hate it. Basically, it was tied to her feelings about him, of course. So the conditioning, this is what I'm trying to get at, the condition of she's got this man that she loves. And then as those feelings went sour, she started to hate the smell of that cologne too. That story has always stuck with me. Well, for one thing, my boyfriend at the time wore Polo cologne too. This was in Houston where people wore cologne. They probably still do. I don't know. But I've always remembered that. And it applies so well to this topic because it is not personal. It's not in the cologne. That cologne itself has no pleasant, unpleasant. It's what I'm bringing to it. What story, what conditioning, and how am I making myself suffer? You know, when I say the cologne is wrong, the siren's wrong, juicy steak is wrong, I'm the one who's getting into aversion and it's starting that cycle of, and you can hear a lot of I now too. It's like what Susan talked about. These three characteristics of all phenomena, that was our first talk back in June. We can bring that to bear on this subject too, where I can look at Vedana and say, is this personal? Is this permanent? Is this leading to my well-being to have these aversive or these clinging thoughts? So I'm kind of all over the place. I'm glad you're trying to keep up. So here's what I've said so far. You know, just to frame it up for the problem and the solution, that is a great way to frame these kind of subjects. The problem is that when I don't see the Vedana, my mind clings to the pleasant and it rejects the unpleasant and it spaces out over the neutral. That is not awakening. That is not freedom. That's actually my life is being directed by these motives. So I'll read a little bit Joseph Goldstein in his book Mindfulness, which is in our resources. We've got a resources list on the Buddhist Essentials page. And everything that I'm going to quote from is on that resource list. But so here's the Buddha describing the problem as we see it. Being contacted by painful feeling, one seeks delight in sensual pleasure. This was really important to me when I first heard this because I thought, well, that's where addiction comes from. I don't like what I'm in. I'm going to go find something pleasant. I'll just repeat that and then continue. Being contacted by painful feeling, one seeks delight in sensual pleasure. For what reason? Because the uninstructed worldling, it's people who haven't found the Dharma yet, the uninstructed worldling does not know of any escape from painful feeling other than sensual pleasure. This bhikkhus, monks, is called an uninstructed worldling who is attached to birth, aging and death, who is attached to sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair, who is attached to suffering. So he's showing us right there that when the uninstructed part is that I'm not using mindfulness. So that when I'm not mindful of a sensation that comes in that I don't like, I push it away and I want to go to something pleasant. I don't like what you just said. I'm going to the refrigerator. I think this is so common. And if I can say, ooh, I don't like what you just said, thumbs down and stop there. And then actually sense in, this is like the practice piece, sense in to what happens to that Vedana. Is it permanent? You know, just watching it like we do with, we need to bring this lens of wisdom to it, just like we do everything. This lens of it's not permanent, it's not personal, and it's not leading to my liberation. To be attached to this, to think this is everything there is in the world, is this pleasant or unpleasant feeling. So then he talks later about the solution, if you will. Instructed noble disciples, that would be us. So he says, being contacted by that same painful feeling, one harbors no aversion to it. Like I see a picture of a juicy steak and I go, ah, that's gross. And I leave it. Being contacted by painful feeling, one does not seek delight in sensual pleasures. Well, that sounds like freedom to me, actually, that I could experience anything and not have to do something about it. Equanimity. I can just be like, yep. You know what I say a lot is when someone, like I'm driving and someone does something that I think is dumb, I just say to myself, I disapprove. I disapprove. That's like thumbs down, move on. I don't need to get angry. I don't need to go show them and do what they did to me. And I can let it go. I disapprove. Or even just, we could just say unpleasant, unpleasant, pleasant. You know, when I hear some beautiful music, but it's time to get out of the car, I want to stay in the car and keep listening to this song or whatever, even if it's Mozart or, you know, I can just say, oh, that's really pleasant. And it's time to do something else now. I've been thinking a lot about this lately, about change, like how do we actually change? And I think this is one of the keys, is being able to tolerate what is happening. If it's unpleasant, tolerate the unpleasant. If it's pleasant, let it go when it ends. And then I don't have to be, Rodney Smith has an example in his book, like being led around by the nose ring, like a cow, you know? I don't have to be led around by my circumstances. And I think that's exactly what the solution is here. And Rodney said in his book, I had this quote written down, feelings, like Vedana, feelings set the tone for our relationship to all conditioned experiences. They set the tone for our relationship. So this is really about, what is my relationship to reality? I mean, isn't all of the Dharma, what is my relationship to reality? Because we're learning, the more we practice, reality is just what it is. There's nothing I can do about it. There's really not much I can do about changing. I certainly can't change what is already here. I might be able to change what will be, but there's no changing what is already here. So I haven't gone through most of my notes already. But I have covered, I think, what the important stuff is to say about it, that it comes from sense contact. It starts there. And then another thing about Vedana, it's going to keep happening the rest of our lives. This is from the Buddha. Vedana is not going to stop. And I had this insight for myself on retreat. Our instructor had us practice, and I'm going to give you this practice during our sit period here soon, which is just put a tick down next to the Vedana. Like there's four columns, or like there's two halves. There's like pleasant or unpleasant. And like I said, we can just set aside neutral for a while, and we'll do that when we're more advanced. Pleasant or unpleasant. And then, is it physical or mental? Because there's like the Rainier example I gave, that would be more of a mental, a response to a mental feeling for the woman whose partner had died there. It's not like she's hearing fingernails on a blackboard. That's more physical. Or like someone pinches you. So this is the practice you could do. Is it mental or physical? Is it pleasant or unpleasant? And just put a tick by there and keep a record. Basically, I love this phrase, what does the record show? Like, what is the reality? What is actually happening? And so I had this insight on retreat where I was doing this practice, pleasant, unpleasant, pleasant. And I realized, I just stopped short during walking meditation and I said, unpleasant is never going to stop. Not to say that one unpleasant feeling continues. It's not that. It's that things are going to continue to be unpleasant because I'm, like Susan said, in this human body. This is the result of being born, is that I, like the amoeba, when you poke it, it moves away. I have this, we all do, this inborn reaction against pain, right? Because it keeps us alive, and toward pleasure because it keeps us alive as well. We have food, we have sex, we have society because of these urges. They're natural. They're not going to stop. This isn't what we're trying to do, is like, don't have unpleasant. It's like to have mindfulness to see, oh yeah, unpleasant. I disapprove. Move on. Keep going. Relax. Feel what's in the body. So the last thing I'll say is that, unfortunately, because I had a lot more to say, is that the way this foundation is a bridge between what Susan talked about, the body, and then what will be talked about, the mind, is because the Vedana, like I read different things researching this, that the Buddha says in different places that it's only in the body. Some people have interpreted that Vedana is felt in the body, and other places it's that it's sensed in the mind. So it has this way of connecting these two, which in the West we separate them, but in the East they're not so separate. It's chitta, heart, mind. So body, mind, like there's a way that we separate them here that might be useful, and it also might be inaccurate in some ways. So just to feel into as we practice together, you can take the same instructions that Susan used, like feeling the breath in the body. Is it long? Is it short? And then notice if there is an added element of thumbs up, thumbs down. Ooh. You know, that's it, just to notice it. And also, when I talked about bringing wisdom in, I meant notice if it stays or goes, how long does it stay? You can watch it, the pleasant arise, you can watch it sustain and then drop away. Because that'll happen, you know, when we're eating, we can talk about this later with eating meditation. You take a bite, it tastes delicious for about, I don't know, 10 seconds, and then the sense of flavor fades. If we're really mindful, we can see what is life really like. And then we become dispassionate about it and ease into this equanimity that is what the Buddha promised. That was a quick 20 minutes. So we'll spend a little time now practicing with this. Let me make sure I'm on schedule in the right way. Yeah, so we'll spend 20 or 25 minutes practicing with Vedana, and then we'll do a breakout group to discuss these first two foundations and our experience this morning or our understanding of them, and then we'll have mindful eating instructions. So I'm going to keep my video on so that you can see me, but you're welcome to also turn off your videos and just sit however you like. And I'll do a little guided lead-in for us on this subject of Vedana, and then I'll ring the bell in about 25 minutes from now. So as Susan said, starting with the body, what's here right now? How is it right now in this body mind? And I found it's helpful at the beginning of a sitting period to develop an intention for the practice for the next 20, 25 minutes. What's my plan? What's my plan of action? So in this case, it would be, if you want to follow the suggestion of practicing with Vedana. So when something arises, just putting a tick next to that column of, is it pleasant or unpleasant? Is it in the body or the mind? Does it last? And bringing an attitude, like Susan mentioned, of curiosity, friendliness. We're just looking. We don't need to change anything, even if we could. I'll admit I cheated you guys out of a few minutes of meditation because I had some more thoughts that I just really wanted to share before we go on to the breakout rooms. Just a reminder that Vedana in itself is not suffering. I said it would never end, and that's from the Buddha and from my own experience as well. But that is not what suffering is. Suffering is when we don't see the Vedana and then we are led around like that cow by the ring in the nose toward approaching something or avoiding something or spacing out around something, those three different responses, because of the conditions. And I also wanted to say that metta practice is adding a new condition to our system. So when you may have done metta practice before with the neutral person, so-called, or the difficult person, and notice that over time, the Vedana about that person changes. So that's where we also have power in this, is to first is mindful, just to be aware of the Vedana, but also that Vedana can change for the better over time. That is, I can practice sending loving kindness to someone who I don't like, who is unpleasant, and that can change the attitude, and there's less pain in a neutral feeling than there is in an unpleasant feeling by its nature. So the practice of metta being helpful there with Vedana. And the last thing I wanted to mention, this is a whole nother topic in itself, but worldly versus unworldly Vedana. And the worldly meaning, for example, like the example that came to me was like finding 20 bucks on the ground. That's happened to me, and it's like very pleasant. Whoa, $20, you know? And that would be the worldly pleasant. Nothing wrong with that. It's just a pleasant feeling. And then the unworldly would be, for example, giving away $20, which I've also done. And if you can just sense into your own experience that the feeling of finding the 20 versus giving away the 20, I have to say that the giving away is more fulfilling. It has more of a continuity, like more of a permanence, actually. It's like when the Buddha talked about generosity and he said, you know, in the contemplation of it, there is joy. In the doing of it, there's joy. And in the remembering that we've done it, there is joy. So it's the kind of thing that it continues. Whereas I admit, finding the 20 on the ground does not continue. It's kind of done. So this unworldly or like spiritual Vedana is a whole nother interesting side of this discussion. So two more like technical details about today. I wanted to say that you may have noticed we're recording, and just to assure you that we're recording just the Dharma, we're recording the whole thing for our own ease, but only the Dharma talks will be posted publicly. So you won't be there in the breakout rooms, and the Q&A later aren't going to be part of the what's posted publicly. And so when we do the breakout rooms, I think Lyndall's going to try to do it so that there's a local Dharma leader in each of the breakout rooms if we want to have a discussion that's somewhat facilitated. And I don't know if there's instructions around the breakout rooms, but what I was thinking was just to let us know where you are with the topics for today. And if you had any questions, there might be an LDL in there to help guide the conversation. So with that, I thank you for your attention. It was a pleasure being with you and getting to share some of this with you today. Thanks.